Welcome to episode 161 of the Fertility Podcast. I'm hiding in my voiceover booth to get this podcast out to you. I've just been on an IKEA shop with my husband. If you've been listening to the podcast and you follow me on social media, you'll know that we've just moved house. So we've just done that thing where we were really specific with what we needed to get from IKEA, and you walk around, you follow the arrows, don't you? But you go off-piste. And then you add all sorts of things. We've got new cushions. We've got a plant. We've called him Eric, but we might be changing his name to Yakov. Not sure yet, but I love him. He's a big yucca plant. And it's ridiculous, but I've been wanting a big plant for ages, and for whatever reason, I haven't got one. And I was like holding him in the car on the way back, feeling the energy of Eric or Yakov, the house plant. I highly recommend getting a new plant, because in the last 45 minutes, my spirits have lifted. I was a bit, I don't know, early, I was a bit like, well, I don't really want to go to IKEA because I need to get this podcast out for you. But I wanted to go because we're getting all stuff for the house and it's exciting. And now I've got Eric or Yakov, depending on what we call him. I digress, as always. Hello, I'm Natalie, if this is your first listen. I'm your host. I'm a former fertility patient. I've got a little boy called Phoenix, who will be 4 in March, who has a new rug for his playroom from our IKEA shop. If you are just finding your feet with this podcast, it might well be because you've started to look into more stuff about your fertility. Do have a look at the Fertility Podcast website. There's loads of episodes where I've spoken to experts in all different fields about all different topics that could affect your fertility, covering male and female fertility issues. I've also talked to a lot of people sharing their stories, which is what this podcast is about. It's about educating you about what could be. Maybe you'll hear somebody talking about something that you are going through, or you've been thinking about, or wanting to know more. So there's over 160 episodes now, and it's all about making you feel less alone, making you see that you are perfectly within your right to ask questions. And I encourage it so much at any stage of this process. If you're sat in front of a professional feeling like you might be asking a stupid question, no question is too stupid, and you want to be empowered with as much info as you can. Now, yesterday in the UK, a journalist called Emma Barnett, who I'm a big fan of, wrote an article in the Sunday Times, which is one of our national newspapers, about her own IVF journey. She's had successful treatment, but she was highlighting the issue about there being add-on treatments, which is something that is an issue worldwide. And there was a lot of work done earlier in the year by the HFEA, who are our government body, to crack down on the practice of charging top-up fees for what are experimental procedures. There's not the evidence to prove that they work, yet people are being talked into them, and it's something that I'm looking at covering more. I've touched on it in the past on this podcast, but I'm hoping to talk more about it. And if it's something that you are trying to navigate your way through at the moment, I'd be really keen to talk to you, maybe about some that you've already tried, or maybe that you've been talking about and wanting to know more about for maybe ongoing treatment. I'll give you my details at the end of this episode, as well as my social media links if you've just found this podcast and just started following me, because I did just share Emma's article on my Twitter and my Instagram. Now, my guest today is a specialist in reflexology, which I thought was quite appropriate considering all these conversations going on about add-ons, because I think when it comes to things like acupuncture and reflexology, these like holistic approaches, they are questionable, so you want to know the facts. And my guest has the facts. She has some really interesting studies about how reflexology can help you on your fertility journey, whether you're just starting out or whether you are going through treatment. Have a listen. So I'm now going to welcome Barbara Scott to the podcast. Barbara is the founder of Seren Reflexology. She's a complementary therapist, chairperson of the Association of Reproductive Reflexologists, and author of Reflexology for Fertility, which is a comprehensive practitioner's guide available on Amazon. But we were just talking, and apparently lots of people are buying the book who aren't necessarily practitioners. So Barbara, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Natalie. Absolute pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's lovely to chat, and I'm really curious to talk more about reflexology, especially as you were just saying to me, more and more members of the public are buying the book, because personally,
I've heard about it from friends that have had it. It's not something that I used during my fertility treatment because, and it's funny because I saw on your website, I've got really ticklish feet. And on your website, you say it doesn't matter if you're ticklish, that you can work with people with even the most sensitive of feet. Let's talk about reflexology because it's around the hands and the feet, the way you work, isn't it?
Yes, so we work with both. When you go to see one of our practitioners, they will work on your feet. And it is a very bizarre thing. I always say in Western society, it's a curious thing that someone can work on your feet and it has an impact upon the whole of your body. So that's the first premise. And also, the other thing to say is the reason it's not ticklish is because it is very firm and precise pressure. So we're kind of not doing these kind of fluffy kind of massagey movements. We're working on what are very precise reflex points in the feet that represent the relevant parts of your body, and in our case as reproductive reflexologists, they represent the parts of your body that are going to improve your fertility, health and well-being.
So what stage do you find people are coming to you? Have they found out there's an issue and they're going to need fertility treatment? Are they just trying to get pregnant and they're looking to enhance their chances as much as possible?
So we find people are coming from every different aspect. So we have some who are just saying, actually, we're slightly older. We know that might be an issue. So actually what we'd like to do is make sure we're in the best possible health before we start. And we also, I mean, I think probably my most complex case so far was a couple who had been trying for 11 years without success.
Okay.
So every aspect. And one of the things that you might find interesting for us to talk about later on is that we did a data collection as an organisation, because what we do is we have a very integrative approach. So we use and collaborate with the medical profession so that we can provide a patient-centred approach. What that's allowed us to do is measure effectively. So we looked at 180 cases and drew some data out of that. And the age range, this is the interesting bit, was from age 23 to 46. So a very broad spectrum in terms of age.
Well, let's talk more about it, because I think evidence-based treatment is a massive part when people are looking into different things. And I think sometimes the perception of the more natural methods people might overlook because they don't know that there is evidence about their success rate. So what kind of things were you looking for and what did you find out?
Okay, so the first thing we did with the 180 cases was kind of put them all in the same pot. Of those 180 cases, we had some that were undergoing assisted conception, some that were just using reflexology. And what we found was that 122 of them fell pregnant, 100 naturally, and 22 whilst using IVF or ICSI. So that gave us a success rate of 68%, just putting them all in the same pot. And then what we did was the data that we looked at, we then extracted by looking at various conditions. So we looked at things like PCOS, endometriosis, amenorrhea, and ovulatory cycles. We looked at some of the male fertility factors. And then we extracted from that live birth rates, well, pregnancy rates, and then live birth rates. So lots of fluctuations there, but what we found was the minimum pregnancy rate was 57% and the highest was actually 100%. So women with ovarian cysts, we had a very high success rate with. So lots of fluctuations. But the other interesting thing, we looked at the effects we were having on IVF. Now, very small sample, 22 cases. The general understanding is that success rates for IVF are around 25%, and our success rate for IVF was 52%.
Wow.
So we had more than doubled the success rate using that data. So it's very interesting.
Amazing. And just going back on the ovarian cysts that you mentioned, so are you saying that if a woman's coming to you having discovered that that's something that she has, that reflexology can help?
What I'm saying is that certainly within that data, what we had was very positive outcomes. I'm always someone who is cautious. And so I will say this could be an avenue for you. It is something that we now have some data that shows that it is effective in terms of treating women, and what we say specifically is using this very specific kind of reflexology because it is evidence-based. It does use medicine to back up what it's doing, and also it's very structured. It's completely different to other forms of reflexology, so I have to be clear about that to start with, because they are protocols that are designed to remedy physiological conditions by understanding how those physiological conditions affect the body. So I'm always cautious because, you know, it's a bit like, you know, if you had 100 people who went to the doctors and had headaches, they'd all perhaps respond to different kinds of medication. And what you may find is that some people respond very well to reflexology, others respond better to acupuncture, etc. So, you know, I always say, particularly when we're training practitioners, is that we need to be very open, very honest, very fair, and not make any false promises.
Okay. I mean, to be completely fair, there's no guarantee with any of the treatment, even if you're having fertility treatment. So I think it's really interesting to know that there are different types of reflexology, because I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't have even realised that. You just assume it was a thing, like acupuncture is a thing that you can have. So if we're talking about a time frame, and I know that everybody's different and it depends on their scenario, often when I talk to different experts about supplementation or nutritional changes, lifestyle changes that you can take on to improve yourself in your journey, you know, to fertility, to in your journey to becoming pregnant, whether you're trying naturally or you're going to embark on treatment, is there a set time frame or a minimum time frame that you'd need to be having? You talked about the protocol that you use, you know, that working with you to really try and see the benefits.
Okay, so what we like to do with both men and women is we like to have a 3-month period. So what that allows us to do, if we talk about men first of all, of course, what we know is that how sperm develop in men, and because of the development and the maturation process, we're talking about, you know, a 90 to 100 day period of time from being produced to being ready for utilization. So what we have is a very structured way of working with that, and we would want to have that 3-month period, it particularly if there were issues before we went on to, you know, them trying to conceive naturally, or certainly if they were going on for further assisted reproduction techniques. And in a way, not dissimilar with women, we always like to go back to basics, even if for whatever reason they are going to have some kind of other medical intervention. What we like to do is we like to make sure that all of the key component parts of the menstrual cycle are working effectively. And I cannot tell you the number of women that I see who say, there's nothing wrong with my cycle, everything's absolutely fine. I have a standard 28 days, and I will caveat that with, you don't have to have a 28-day cycle for it to be standard, and there's nothing wrong. And then what we do is we use charting, or we use a medicalized kit. At the moment we're using OvuSense to actually collect the data, and the number of women who have got their timing wrong, they're not ovulating when they think they are, or their luteal phase is too short, or they're not producing sufficient progesterone, is quite remarkable. And that's down to education. One of the things we're passionate about is education. And so what we like is time to remedy that and kind of anchor it, make sure that it's actually stable under stress, because it has a big impact upon menstrual cycles, before we then say, right, where do we go from here? Let's start trying to conceive.
Well, it's interesting you mention OvuSense, because I've been working with them and have used their monitor, and I was exactly what you've just described, and in using, you know, the monitor, discovered that things weren't quite as I'd thought. Our menstrual education is so not what we know it should be and could be. So I think it's great that there is that focus. We are going to talk a bit more about men in a moment, but just going back to women and their cycles and working with you, say then the process is to have treatment. How does it work incorporating something like reflexology in fertility treatment? Can you have it during a cycle? Are there certain times you should or shouldn't have it?
Or you can use it alongside all forms of assisted conception, from ovulation induction to IUI, right through to IVF and ICSI. And the reason you can have it is because what we have are protocols that are designed to support any drug treatment that you're undertaking. So in a way, when I'm teaching to reflexologists, what I'm saying to them is, this is where we turn reflexology on its head, because we are all trained to support the body and its normal functions physiologically and anatomically to achieve its best. Now, when clients are undertaking any form of assisted conception, it's really important that you don't do that, because you could well be working against what the drugs are trying to achieve. So therefore, what we need to do is we need to have a very good and comprehensive understanding of what those drugs at each stage, in terms of maybe an IVF cycle, are setting out to achieve. And what has happened, what I've done, is designed protocols that work physiologically to support that process. So it means that they can safely have IVF and reflexology alongside each other. And the interesting thing that we've found, particularly if you manage to do a good amount of preparation before they start treatment, is that you have less side effects, improved drug reactions, and better outcomes.
In the time that you've been practicing, have you seen a change in people's behaviour towards their well-being? As far as, I mean, one of the things that I try to get across with the podcast and the educational side of what I do is that surely you should try and be match fit before trying to have a baby. Surely, like, why wouldn't you want to be the best you can be before trying to create life? And I think that we're much better informed than we have been. Are you seeing that in your patients, or are you still having to help people understand the importance of inside out, you know, working like that?
I would say that what you have are two extremes now.
Right.
I think that there are still many who really don't understand the importance of health and well-being when it comes to fertility. And you have the others who have a belief that they are extremely well informed, but have been using Dr. Google, and therefore come with huge anxieties. They're misinformed, but they certainly have a huge motivation to want to do the right thing. And actually, they're fantastic to work with. Whereas with the others, it takes us a lot longer, because sometimes, you know, they don't understand the relevance of just how vital it can be. And I know, I mean, I do a lot of work supporting practitioners who are supporting their own clients in their own clinics. And, you know, we do still have couples who are, you know, going out partying at weekends and, you know, smoking cannabis every night, some of them, and just cannot grasp the fact that that is going to have an impact upon their fertility.
Okay. Seeing as you've pinpointed certain lifestyle choices, let's talk about men and the different ways that you can help men. And it's probably a bit unfair to have brought that in like that, but I mean it in the sense that whilst smoking obviously affects egg health, it has quite an effect on sperm health. And you do an interesting test as well as the standard count. You look further because you work with Sperm Comment, who I've spoken to on this podcast, and I'll put the details in this podcast about Sperm Comment, because that's looking at the DNA. And I know, because I talk about it a lot, how important that is. But just explain more about sperm health, what you can find out, how you can help men. Obviously, we've talked about smoking and drinking not being ideal. But I think as well, whilst I'm saying this, we still have to have that everything in moderation, because it is a stressful period that you're going through. And to cut out everything, it might just make you more stressed. So I think moderation is a key word here. Would you agree?
I would agree. And I would also say it's only for a limited period of time. That's the other thing we have to... One of the things, when we're talking to men and we're talking to them about making lifestyle changes, is actually reiterating the fact that it's not forever. This is just for a small period of time to get them in the best possible place so that they can conceive. And I think one of the things that, or one of the many conversations I have with couples when they come, and also men on their own, I have men who've rung up and said, I need to come and see you, it's me that has the problem. And that's been very interesting, because I think it's showing an increasing awareness that men realise that they, you know, they are an integral and very important part of the process. What we have to remember is that, you know, talking about sperm comet, is it isn't just that ability to fertilise an ovum and create this wonderful embryo. It is the DNA, that content in the head of the sperm, and increasingly, you know, we're finding just out just how really important that is. And that there is an awful lot that can be done to improve that. And I think one of the things that puts men off presenting for treatment is that they don't realise just how much support there is for them and how much can be done to improve outcomes. That if you do have a low sperm count, if you do have poor sperm DNA, there are actually sometimes really very simple things that can be done that can improve those outcomes and make sure that you have the ability to, you know, to father a child. Because I think for men it's scary and complex emotionally. You know, one of the things that I always say is that I think for men, that identity with how well their sperm are functioning is a very complex emotional scenario. And actually I do think that it prevents men from coming forward.
I'd 100% agree. And that's one of the reasons as well why I've tried to put more emphasis on that male voice. I mean, we had to have ICSI. It's something very close to my heart, that male factor, in that we dealt with it and it wasn't easy and it's still with us. So the kind of conversations you're having with men and their acceptance of this treatment as a part of the process, is it generally positive? Do you have to convince them more?
I think they're more reluctant to come in the first place. Yeah. But once they do come, we find they are the biggest advocates. I have some of my most interesting conversations with men because we're talking to them very clinically. So we're talking about what medical tests are available, what might be appropriate for them. And then what we are doing is very much engaging them in the process. So although we do use reflexology, although we do use medical tests, we also recommend some really good supplements for them as well. And we also give them homework to do. So we were talking at the beginning about using, you know, when we work as practitioners, we work with their feet, but we also give men homework to do, which involves working on their hands. And the fascinating thing about this is that they may have their tests right at the beginning of treatment, or may have presented for treatment because they've had some poor results. And then we work with them for 12 weeks, and then they may go and have some repeat tests. And that is when they see that all of the parameters have improved. And that is when they become quite hooked, because what they have are some medical tests which show them that this has an evidence base to it and has actually made a difference.
And when you say about having the test, would it be something like the sperm comet test that you'd then, they'd work with you for say 12 weeks, then you'd suggest they had that test, or would they have that test initially?
It depends on the scenario. So if they are, if they're men who, you know, they've just been trying for 6 months to a year and there's nothing really untoward that we think, then we probably would just send them for a pretty, we tend to use, I'm sure you will have spoken to Dr. Cheryl Homer of Andrology Solutions. Yeah. We refer a lot of our men there to have some detailed semen analysis. And so we would have some really good information to work upon. But they may well just come in with a semen analysis from their local NHS hospital, which would provide us with some basic information. If there was nothing terribly alarming, then we probably would work with them initially just with that. But if you have clients who, you know, they've been trying for 2 years, they've had repeated failed IVF cycles, they've had repeated early miscarriages, even if within a year what they've had is maybe one or two early miscarriages, then we would refer them straight away certainly to go and have the sperm combo test.
What about unexplained infertility? If people have been trying and they've been given that annoying label, which again we've talked about in the podcast, because there is such a frustration of not being able to fix it, at least if you have some kind of diagnosis. Like when we were given and told it was male factor, we did everything we could. My other half, you know, he unfortunately was reliant on Dr. Google because we didn't really know what was available at the time, but we made changes. We both made lots of changes. If it's unexplained and people come to you, is there again a different protocol that you'd use?
Yes, and what I would say about unexplained is it's a really unfortunate term, because really what it means is there is something, but we don't know what it is. Mm. And I would say that I have a number of cases that turn up with unexplained, supposedly, infertility issues. And quite often they're not unexplained. There are some fundamental factors that have been missed. And actually, sometimes just by going back to basics, really is the key. And so what we tend to find is sometimes just by going back to basics, making sure the menstrual cycle is functioning properly, that we've got lots of, or as many as we can, good quality sperm, it then takes care of itself. But even so, if that is not the case and they don't get pregnant naturally, then what we tend to find is that that preparation will really have helped with any further medical interventions.
It's fascinating stuff. So, Barbara, you're based in the UK. How can you work with people if people are listening outside, as they do to the podcast outside of the UK? Are there referrals to other organisations in other countries, or what kind of advice would you give to people listening thinking they'd like to find a reflexologist?
Okay, so we do actually have reflexologists globally. We have reflexologists in Canada and the USA, in Australia, in Greece and Hungary, Germany. So we have, if you are looking for a practitioner, the best place to go and look it at is our website, because we do have a find a practitioner on the website. Right. And if you can't find somebody there, then you can always send a little email to us and somebody will respond and help you to find a practitioner.
Well, we'll put all the details of your website in the show notes so people can get in touch, because I think it's really fascinating as a complementary therapy to have alongside your trying to conceive journey, whether you are having treatment or not, because of the power of it, really. And from a cost point of view, obviously, you know, people are concerned about this when it's an ongoing expense. Is there a ballpark figure for what people can expect for each time they visit?
Yes, I think what you'll find is, obviously, because they are practitioners who live in different locations with different demographics, if you're going to a city, then it's going to be more costly. If you're living in a rural area, then it's going to be more reasonable. I live and practice in quite a rural area, so my initial consultation costs are much higher, but the ongoing treatment costs are about £40 per treatment session. Okay. But what you will find is that, of course, there are big differences to that. But it gives people some idea. And I think what you'll find is that most of our practitioners are people who are passionate about helping couples on their journey to parenthood. And therefore, the kind of finances are not what's interesting to them. What they're passionate about is supporting that couple. And most of them have that in mind when they set their charging structure.
It's been fascinating, really fascinating talking to you, Barbara. And like I say, we'll share all the details on the show notes for people to find out more. Because I think from my own personal kind of thoughts about it, it's something that I'd heard of and I knew it could help, but I didn't really understand it, and I kind of thought it was more associated to almost physio and kind of injuries, like fixing yourself after injuries, rather than understanding that it's so powerful and beneficial when you are trying to conceive. So thank you for explaining all of that. I think we covered hopefully all areas that people might be thinking about when they're trying to work out whether this is something that they want to add into the mix. So I really appreciate your time.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and thank you very much for allowing me to just come and share a little bit about what we do.
Before I give you Barbara's details and tell you how you can get in touch and all the other stuff about this podcast, here's a quick note from my sponsor who helps make this podcast possible. If you're looking for a supplement to take whilst trying to conceive, Pregnacare Conception and Wellman Conception provide advanced nutritional support. They include zinc, vitamin D, and the exact levels of folic acid recommended for women by the UK Department of Health. Pregnacare is expert nutritional care while trying for a baby. And to find out more, visit thefertilitypodcast.com/shop. Okay, so the show notes for this episode are thefertilitypodcast.com/flex, F-L-E-X. There you'll see details of Barbara's website, how you can follow her on social media. So do go and have a look. I'll put the link to Emma Barnett and the article that I was talking about at the start of this episode as well. If you would like to join my closed Facebook group, then it is Talk Fertility on Facebook, where I've got some of my previous guests as admins, and we just try to answer your questions. It's a really nice growing community, so it'd be lovely to have you there. If you haven't yet had a listen to some other episodes, thefertilitypodcast.com has a really handy search box in there, and you can also sign up to my newsletter where I just keep you up to date on stuff going on, trying to get even more active in what I'm doing. And if you have a story that you'd like to share, be it about add-ons that I've been mentioning, where you're at on your journey, something you've seen me put on Facebook or on my socials, just email me, natalie@thefertilitypodcast.com, because I want to continue to help make useful content. Because I want to continue to make content that you want to know about. So if there's a contentious issue, if there's something going on where you're at, especially if you are in Australia, in Canada, or South Africa. I'm working my way around the world with this podcast, and I'd particularly like to hear from you if you are in those three countries. Something else that I've been doing is putting flyers in the doctor surgeries in the UK to try and spread the word about the fertility podcast. I'm going kind of back to basics with flyers when we do so much on social media. I had completely overlooked flyers, and I've had some lovely messages from you offering to put them in your doctor's or your fertility clinic. So if that's something you'd like to help me with, amazing, you rock. Just drop me a line on my email or any of my socials and I will send you a little pack of flyers, because I'm trying to get as many people to know about this podcast, which is also where you can help me by rating and reviewing this very poddy, either in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Just because the more of these ratings that happen, I can share them on social, but also more people see that the podcast is getting kind of traction. So whether it's a flyer in your doctor's or just a quick review, you help me big time. And, you know, I've already been doing this 4.5 years because of you. I'd love to carry on going. I mean, I've got some really exciting stuff going on for next year with a real emphasis on fertility education, giving you stuff that, you know, maybe you've not really found out too much about: functional medicine, holistic approaches, stuff that can make you be as fit and well as you possibly can be, helping you combat certain issues that you've been told, or if you've been told you've got unexplained, as Barbara spoke about with me, things that could help you get your head around and deal with that. So lots to come. I know I'm talking about the new year, but this podcast is going out to you mid-November 2018. I mean, where has this year gone? I can't actually remember if I've given you my socials. It's at FertilityPoddy on Insta and Twitter. And my email is natalie@thefertilitypodcast.com. Thank you, as always, for your support. And until the next time.